everybody, including you, including me, needs a little help. Even if you have trouble admitting it. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. It's just that simple. And if your sales needs help, it may be time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy and gamified way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn some new advanced strategies to close the next deal. You know, sales, closing, that's what it's all about. Or creating the atmosphere where the other person wants to buy. We have hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting, you name it. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge anywhere on the planet that you can actually use 1 minute after you learn it. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com today and sign up for a free demo. I love free, and so will you. You can talk about Harvard all you want, but I grew up in Philadelphia. I'm telling you, it's Wharton. And
I couldn't tell by the Philadelphia Eagles t-shirt.
Yeah, it was hard to tell.
Of course, no one else can see it, but I can see it.
So and by the way, the Eagles come up every episode. Yeah. So.
Oh, I'm well aware. I've seen him on stage.
Oh, that's funny.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, the global premier sales and personal development podcast. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. Welcome, everybody. We're glad you're here today.
And before we start to wax a little bit, we really have somebody amazing today on the show. Her name is Tiffany Bova, and she is the Salesforce evangelist for a lot of stuff, including global customer growth and innovation. And Salesforce, if you don't know them, they are the 999-pound gorilla in the CRM world. We just passed their office building in New York City, which is a 30-story building on 6th Avenue between 44th and 43rd. It's right across from the Christmas exhibition at Bryant Park right now. And I would challenge you that if you are not using Salesforce, you should at least look at what it offers so that you might be able to get and glean ideas for what you need in your CRM, because they have thousands of people that are contributing software to the program.
But she's not even going to talk about Salesforce today.
It's not
she's
a sales
talking
pitch.
About right. She's talking about customer experience, what it is and why it should matter to you. So her episode is amazing. But first, we have a Facebook question.
Uh-oh.
And this question comes to us from our Sell or Die Hard's official Facebook group, which you can join right now by searching Sell or Die on Facebook. And Mike, you're the Sell or Die Hard of the week. Thank you for your question.
Mike obviously is coming out with Harry and Meghan.
Oh, man. Okay. So Mike's in software sales, and here's what he says. The software he's selling is slow, and it causes customers objections. The software is due for an upgrade, but it could be weeks or months before it gets better. You know how that development stuff works.
Oh, know it well.
The software does eventually help people with their problems, but it's slow. And he reiterates in the group that it's a really, really good product, but like it just takes a while to load. So how does he deal with that objection?
I think that there are issues that he needs to be pro and con with so that the customer doesn't have a surprise when they – if he knows it's slow, he has to tell it's slow.
Oh, I agree. Because, you know, what happens is they won't even experience the great part about it if they get frustrated by the slowness. Like, ever try to download something and it's taking forever because you're on an airplane or something, and you're like, oh my God, it's worse than AOL speeds. You know, and you just start to get, like, so frustrated.
You know, it's a fucking miracle is what it is.
And I know. You're in this giant bus in the air, and you're downloading from the internet.
Where does it come from?
I get it. I get it.
No one knows where it comes from. It's like this big thing in New Jersey someplace.
Okay, so you let it slide because...
Or you think of a tweet in the middle, or you put yourself, you put your mind to other uses that...
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so there you go. So, Mike, what you can do is give them things they can do while they're waiting for it to download.
And it's, Mike, it's in your mind more than it's in their mind. Mm. You're afraid of it. You know that it's an issue. And rather than deal with the issue, you're kvetching about the issue.
Well, Mike, if you're using the software to make your own sales, because I think it's like a sales tool, what do you do? Yeah. While you're waiting for it to load, do you go to another web page? Do you, you know, do some other work? What do you do and give those ideas to your customers?
This is a fantastic question for this episode because really it is all about customer experience and the customer is experiencing it being slow. I wonder, I kind of want to steal a page from Jeffrey's book.
Please do. Everyone else does.
Right. About painting a picture. And I wonder if this would work, if painting them a picture, hey, Thanksgiving's coming up, and we all have had that experience on Thanksgiving at about, I don't know, 11 a.m., 12, or getting hungry, and someone says, well, the turkey's not going to be done until 4 o'clock. I'm like, oh, my God, I got to wait till 4 o'clock. But that turkey... is so delicious when and juicy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's really
good. And so what do you do? You go have a candy bar or some Halloween leftover candy.
Yeah. And no one would throw the turkey out.
No.
Right. No, exactly.
With
you
the dishwater.
Wait for the turkey because you know it's like the prized possession on that plate.
And you don't want to eat it too early because it won't be as good.
Yeah.
You have to let it go.
That's a great example. By the way, for those of you joining for the first time, that was our producer, Doug Branson.
Yep.
And he rocks.
And we're getting our turkey this year at Harris Teeter from Al.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because HelloFresh actually will give you a turkey you can cook.
I don't want HelloFresh.
Yeah, I know.
I want Hello Stale.
Oh, you want it already made. I get
bingo.
It.
Bingo. Yeah, bingo. I want it.
Hello, it's done.
Jeffrey doesn't trust me to cook the turkey, but that's okay because I don't want to cook it.
Right. Hello, go pick it up. So let's talk about this guy and what his – just one more thing about him.
Sure.
He has to cover the issue in his presentation or he will lose because the customer's experience, better known as their outcome after purchase, will be a surprise and not as good as they were hoping for.
Yeah.
Because he's selling the sizzle, not the delay.
Yes. The one other thing I would do, so paint the picture, tell them what you're doing while it's loading, that kind of thing. Explain that it's slow, whatever. Get customer testimonials of people who are talking about how great their results are from using the product. And they can even say, yeah, guys, it's slow. I'm going to be honest here. It's slow. But once you get it, this changed my sales. This changed my outcome. And here's how. Here's why.
And you can just say comparatively it's slow. You can say that, you know, wine, Dom Perignon takes a little bit longer to ferment. But it's $100 a bottle, or you can go buy New York champagne for $8.99 a bottle. It's up to you.
All right. Cool. Mike, thank you for the question. Guys, we want to answer your questions. Go to the Seller Die Hard official Facebook group and post your questions up there. You'll get feedback from the group and we'll answer it live on Seller Die.
So I want to introduce Tiffany Bova, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
You may consider yourself good at customer service, but how much do you really know about the customer experience? Service is one thing. What they perceive it as is quite another.
Mm-hmm.
Tiffany says it's not good enough to go out there and just sell anymore. You have to care about the customer or how the customer interacts with what you're selling them. For someone out there, this interview... For any diehard who's looking for insight and information, this interview will change the way you look at sales, or if you're a manager, the way you deal with your sales force. And that's a kind of a play on words to introduce
Honey,
the great Tiffany Bova.
So Tiffany, you're known as an expert in customer experience. And I want to know, how did that become something you're so passionate about?
You know, I like to start by saying I sort of bleed sales blood. I grew up as a salesperson, a quota bearing salesperson, and everyone used to talk about sort of solution selling and relationship selling. And if you really boil that down, it's about delivering your customers a really great experience,
exactly.
Right? Selling them what they need, giving them what they want, being very responsive.
Communicating in advance when something's about to go wrong.
Communicating in advance when something's mm-hmm. about to go wrong.
Right.
Those kinds of things. And so in many ways, customer experience and everyone talking about it now is this continuing pivot towards just being better at those moments of truth when you're in front of the customer, whether you're a salesperson or a customer service representative, you know, anybody that's got that face-to-face or phone or you know, online engagement with customers. So I think it's just an evolution of having been so passionate about sales for so long. And now it's just, we're talking about customer experience.
And so carrying the bag has been an extremely important part of your expertise. You want to go back just a little bit and talk about how you carried that bag and what were the successes and the frustrations that you felt to lead you to this position?
Yeah, I would say this, that I didn't realize how good I was at sales until I decided that I was going to get a sales job. And then I said, well, I'm kind of good at this, right? So I went home and told my mom, I think I'm going to get into sales. And she sort of tipped her head and went, what? Like,
right. You know, well, call me when you get a real job, Tiffany. Right.
Like, well, I don't even know what that means. Like, what does that mean? You're going to get into sales, right? And I'm like, well, I'm going to sell stuff. She's like, well, haven't you always done that? And I'm like, yeah, but now I'd like to get paid for it, right? So I started selling technology. I mean, when I went out and got a real job. And so I always sold technology. So I started out as a individual contributor, and then I managed a little team, and then I managed a bigger team, and then I managed a bigger team, you know, and then eventually I was running a division at Gateway Computers, actually. My last sort of quota bearing sales job, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, took time. I needed a break, actually. Sales had worked me. Like, I just felt like I had been through the ringer for about 10 years, you know, 10 or 12 years of just selling is a full-time sport, you mm-hmm. know? So, you really have to be committed and running big teams. You know, I was always on an airplane and there's lots of dynamics in doing that. And having the CEO know your phone number, you know, and calling you 24/7 was something I needed. I think I needed a little break from.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
I can relate.
I call Jen 24/7 all the time.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay. So here's what I'm thinking about. So a lot of our diehards are owners or, you know, business owners or entrepreneurs, and creating that customer experience totally makes sense because it's part of the things that they care about. But talk to us about what you recommend for salespeople, because salespeople are thinking about making the sale and also thinking about, you know, how do I even impact customer experience? That it goes to the next team. They do the delivery. So what do you recommend for our diehard salespeople out there?
Yeah, I tell you, you nailed this paradox, right? Where the owners, it matters that, you know, even if you're a small business, say, well, look, we really want to be more customer led or customer centric mm-hmm. or customer experience, sort of whichever term you want to use. And the salespeople are like, that's great, but what do you want me to do?
Right.
Like, you've asked me to go out and sell, and that's my job, and I'm trying to retire quota. Mm-hmm. And so you're right, salespeople will sell, and I'm oversimplifying for listeners. I don't mean this literally, right? But sell and sort of toss it over the fence, right? And then, as you said, it becomes someone else. Someone else now is responsible for it. And that very comment, right, that is where there's room for improvement. That how do you get sales to think about the lifetime value of the customer? Are they acquiring the right customers up front? You know, are the customers going to buy more from us in the future? Like, what other things can we do? And at the bottom line, it has everything to do with metrics, like how you pay the rep, how you reward the rep, and how you manage them.
So I'm a salesperson, just hypothetically, I'm a salesperson at my company, and my company does not incentivize me to lead with customer experience.
That's right.
But I still want to take ownership and leadership to be able to do this. What do you recommend I do? What are some best practices?
Well, I think that there's, you know, I hate to do this. It's so hard when you don't have like a whiteboard and people can see sort of what you're talking about. But if you say there's sort of groups of sellers, I like to say there's A sellers, sort of group one of sellers. And that tends to be, if you have 100% of your sales team, it's like 15% of them are going to do what you just described, regardless of whether they are incentivized or not, mm-hmm. right? That is just who they are. That's in their core DNA. That's in their makeup. Underneath that, you'll have B sellers group two. It's like 65% of your sales team. And those are your diehard workhorses where they're just like, tell me what to do. I will run through a rock wall for you. I'll do whatever you need me to do, but maybe not naturally gifted with that subtlety of, I'm going to deliver a better experience, whether I'm paying, getting paid for it or not, because I know in the long term, they're taking a long-term view is very different than a day-to-day, week-to-week, quarter-to-quarter view mm-hmm. That maybe those B guys will do, guys and girls. And then your C group is sort of those that you need to either manage out or continue to reskill. And so my answer to you would be different in those three categories, right? Because you wouldn't have to tell me to do it. Those relationships that I built 20 years ago, I still have today. Because I knew that if I delivered a compelling experience, they would stay in my orbit, regardless of what job I had. The B guys are, that's that very metric. What do you want me to do? How am I going to get paid? And that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to try to get better at that. As a business owner, though, this is where there's an opportunity it has to be a cultural shift that regardless, you're doing what's best for the customer. Whether you're paid for it or not, we want to make sure the customers always have a good experience. And then that means you may have to hire different kinds of people. That's different than changing behavior with pay, comp, or spiffs or bonuses.
Yeah. Mm. For those diehards who don't know what manage out means, it means fire their ass. But in a nice kind of positive kind of way.
That is a nice friendly way of saying
yeah,
it.
Yeah, manage out is a beautiful term for corporate America. But there's some other things that are involved here, Tiffany. I'd like to really ask you what your opinion is of hunting and farming in the sales world, because oftentimes your process or the process of building that entire customer relationship and the customer experience has to do with the total piece, not the hunter. The hunter goes from place to place, and then the customer service guy comes in afterwards and tries to keep the thing going. It's especially especially prevalent if you're leasing something or renting something like a copy machine or a uniform, where the guy goes out, makes a sale, and then you never hear from him again.
Until it's time to renew.
No, even then now they're even taking that away.
That's true. There's a renewal rep.
So they don't get paid a dime for any extra services provided. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, and that goes back to changing the comp. Yeah, but I would say this on the hunter front is, so let's say, Jeff, you and I, we're both sales reps in the same team, and you sell $1 million and the quota was $1 million, so you get rewarded and you go to club. I sell $750,000, so you sell more than me. I don't make it to club. I'm not rewarded. And I sort of technically maybe missed my quota, right? Because I'm under the $1 million.
Right.
But well, if you look out-
You either miss it or you don't, right?
Yeah. It's pretty black and white. We're a simple bunch, right? Simple bunch. Not overcomplicate things. You hit it or you don't, right?
Okay.
You win or you lose.
Right.
Pretty basic. Yeah. So, but if you look out 6 months, you maybe churned half of those customers. So now your book of business is only worth 500,000. And my book of business has gone from 750 to a million because those customers bought more from us. So who was better? You went to club. I didn't go to club. You hit your quota. I didn't hit my quota, but you hit a million. I hit 750. Over the long term, my customer base was actually better for the business. And this is what I mean by leaders, owners, sales managers having to think differently about how they compensate the hunter, because if they only hunt and then move on, you have the risk of losing a bunch of customers.
Totally. Psst, Jen.
What's up, Jeffrey?
I have a secret.
Tell me.
I have captured Napoleon Hill's foundational wisdom for the 21st century.
Amazing. Let's share that with the diehards.
For a limited time, you can download the first chapter of my new book, Truthful Living, before it's released on Amazon. These easy-to-implement real-world strategies for life, family, business, and your bottom line prove as energizing and inspiring today as they were 100 years ago.
Go get the first chapter of Truthful Living for free.
For free.
It's the foundation of Napoleon Hill's self-help legacy. His long-lost original notes, letters, and lectures, now compiled, edited, and annotated for the modern reader. go to hillsfirstwritings.com and get that chapter for free. So this is so fascinating to me because I've managed people before, and a lot of times year after year when we have to reorg or whatever, we've looked strictly at quota, right? Like, did they make quota or not? And so I think a lot of companies out there look at quota to determine whether or not they should be keeping reps. And if a rep misses their quota by 25%, as in your example, they might be cutting them too soon.
Yeah, because I may not, I might actually, so in that scenario, if it were really me and that were true, I would probably say I walked away from two or three deals that weren't right for us, mm-hmm. meaning, right, that in the end, they would have ended up leaving us, as Jeff described, right, or churning out, or the project was just completely undersold and we would have had to double it. They wouldn't have been happy with us and they would have gone and told all their friends, right? And so I walked away, which, let's go back to the 65% sort of B player. They are not going to walk away mm-hmm. from a deal. An A player will walk away from a deal because sales management will be like, oh, well, if Tiffany says it was going to be a bad deal, I know that she would have done whatever it took to get it done, but not just acquired a customer to retire quota and in the end hurting the business.
I want to throw something at you from a thought process as you relate to this customer experience. The customer buys the salesperson, then they buy the product or the service. Are we agreed on that?
Depending on the product, but yes.
Otherwise, they go to Amazon. They don't have to deal with a salesperson. But the challenge is if they buy me, the salesperson, first, and then a service guy comes in, I didn't buy that service guy. Mm. I bought the sales guy. And I'm going to call that sales guy and go, what the heck is going on here? My first line of communication is back to that salesperson. Then what do you do?
Yeah, and this goes back to a little what I was saying a little earlier, is that customer experience is one of these things that is not a checkbox. It is not a to-do list. It has to become sort of the cultural DNA of the business. So let's play that back out. That, you know, if you were going to buy the salesperson, right, because I trust this person. I have a relationship yep. with them. I've
like
chosen
them.
To give them money.
Right?
I like
them.
Yeah. Right. I buy from people I like. Right. So I do that. And I now this company that I'm engaged with has a very customer first philosophy. Let's pick Zappos as an example. Hmm. And if you did that and it went to customer service, I know for sure customer success in their case, it would be a very similar experience, meaning you would feel a relationship and I like this person and they're in this for me because culturally that is the DNA. Versus if a salesperson's all in and they put it, you know, now it becomes customer services problem, if you will, when a customer is upset and needs something. And customer service is looked at like a cost center where they just get all these complaints and they're not used and empowered and enabled like salespeople to serve the customer better. You're right. The customer is going to go like, I don't want to talk to customer service. I only want to talk to my sales rep. And the sales mm-hmm. rep says, I can't talk to you because you're already
you.
A customer.
Right.
I got to move on.
I can't talk to you.
Right.
You're just a customer, damn it. But if you were a prospect. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what happens, right?
Oh, totally. So, totally.
That yeah, and, for but, me, customer service is the new sales group mm-hmm. in my mind.
Oh, absolutely.
That customer, right. And so if that's the truth and you believe that like I do, then you better enable your customer service people to treat customers the way sales is able to, et cetera.
Are they able to make a financial decision? Can they refund a charge? Can they take a product back that's out of warranty? What can they do?
Yeah, this goes back to that philosophy. You know, in the I'm just going to pick on Zappos for a second. So, you know, at the Zappos case, if you decide that you want to work there as a customer service agent, basically after you go through a rigorous training of like 4 or 6 weeks, they actually have a university of wow, where mm-hmm. you can go and bring your own customer service teams to learn. But when they're done with their, you know, interview process and then their training process at the end, Zappos hands them a $2,500 check and says, here's a check for you. Thank you for your time. No harm, no foul. If you want to take this check and walk out the door. Or you can leave the check and stay employed.
Ooh.
So why do you think they do that?
Door number one, door number two. I'm going to leave the check if I'm
really committed.
If I'm a believer, right.
That's right. So now you're a customer and you call Zappos and the person on the other end of the phone is totally committed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they've actually made
right? And they're good.
A pyrrhic investment.
They're right. but that's the difference, okay? So now you go back to, you know, in even something simple, Jeff, like even something simple as changing customer service, the name of the group, the organization, to customer success. And then starting to enable them like you enable an inside salesperson or an account-based manager, an outbound salesperson or a hunter or a farmer. You know what I mean? I don't need them to be full-blown salespeople. But to your question, if you enable them and empower them to give credit to a customer or, you know, toss in free shipping when there's a problem or send them a replacement part or whatever
right.
it might
be. Give me some rope. So that I can
give me
play,
some rope, right?
But there's one other element, and I'm going to turn over to Jenny. You're screwing with your referral base because you have word of mouth and word of mouth as a result of what happens after the customer takes ownership. What's the outcome of that entire event, and how does that reflect on what's going to happen next? That's what I'm interested in understanding as you're talking about
customers. Oh, I will tell you that your greatest sales force, two words, your greatest sales force is your customers advocating on your behalf, full stop.
Agreed.
You will never be able to hire as many salespeople as how many customers you have talking about your brand. Not possible, right? So advocating on your behalf happens after the sale because they're super happy with you. Now you got to keep them happy with you. And if you have the hunter, farmer, customer service organization mentality, they are really tossing it over the fence. And now customer service gets kind of everything that rolls downhill, right? Which is sometimes what happens. And so you have to empower them.
So I'm now switching from salesperson to business owner, entrepreneur. Yep. How do I create that empowerment? What do I need to do to incentivize my team to be these customer experience leading salespeople?
Yeah, this is a tough one because for me, this is a culture, people, process problem. This is not a sales rep problem or a customer service problem. It's not even a technology problem. Like, you know, I believe at, you know, since I work at Salesforce, like we don't sell technology. In many ways, we sell change, and change is hard because we used to do it this way. Now you do it that way. And so for entrepreneurs and business owners, my recommendation is to just identify the last five great experiences you've had with certain brands and the five not so great and put it on a list and then say, what did you like about those experiences? And I don't care if it's Uber or a hotel or a donut shop or I don't care, right? Like it doesn't matter to me. I'm looking for what made you go, huh, that was a great experience, or that person really helped me and went out of their way.
Yeah.
Write it down and then do the same on the opposite.
Yeah.
And then literally say, what was it about those two things? Now look inside your own company and go, is that what we're doing? Are we doing what's in the good bucket or are we doing what's in the not so great bucket? And it requires you to do a very honest, hard look at every single process and people orientation within your company to do it.
I can do that, Tiffany, but my boss won't let me do anything. I can have all this analysis, but my hands are tied.
But she just said she's the entrepreneur or the business owner. So I'm being the person who could actually do it.
Okay, cool. I'm fine with that. But if you ask a salesperson to do that, they may say, I'm not paid to do that.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to my A, B, and C category. I didn't care what I was paid for.
Yeah.
I blew out my quotas, right? I was able to take my customers with me throughout my 15-year selling career. They followed me. You know, they still follow me today. You know, as you mentioned, I just launched a book. And when I wanted to do anything with my book, I hit my database, which I'd never hit before, of people I hadn't heard from in decades. And everybody came out and said, congratulations, right?
Those
are relationships you build
over time.
Doesn't
that feel good? Hey, doesn't that feel good?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. It shows that I was, I stood for something and they appreciated it.
Okay, so talking about your book, which is called Growth IQ, Get Smarter About the Choices That Will Make or Break Your Business. What are some of those choices that we can get smarter about?
Yeah, this was an interesting journey. So, you know, in between me carrying a quota and joining Salesforce, I had a decade at a little company called Gartner, where I was a research fellow. So for people who don't know who they are, they're the largest analyst and consulting firm in tech.
Right. Their opinion actually matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much. If you're selling technology, I guarantee you know who they are. But And I was advising companies on transforming sales organizations and the impact of digital marketing on the way companies engage with customers. And it gave me this very unique perspective, having been a practicing seller, marketer, and customer service, because I ran all three. And then now studying it took me a couple years to kind of get my sea legs underneath me, because I was so used to being a quota carrying rep.
And got it.
Through that time, I started to find that most people that were in a little bit of trouble around sales would ask me for what's the one thing I can do this quarter to save my sales numbers. And I heard it pretty consistently, and I realized it was never just one thing. And so that was one of the themes of the book. Then I had to say, well, there's only a handful of ways you can get companies to shore up the sales process. I mean, the sales performance. And so there's 10 paths in the book, and I tried to make it digestible. So sort of 10 ways. But the aha moment for me was that companies that were successful in either recovering from a growth stall or accelerating growth combined the right paths at the right times to be successful. And that was the aha of the book. So many people will go, let me benchmark our competitors and let's just go do what they do. And I'd be like, you're not the same company. So, and you don't know what they're combining things with and what sequence they're doing it. You're just trying to copy what they see from the outside, which is almost impossible. So there's 30 case studies in the book, and that's kind of how I tell these stories.
The argument for people comparing themselves or trying to emulate their competitor is you then can't differentiate yourself from them when you're in front of the customer. Mm-hmm. Like you're like a fool. Yeah,
and
just
then,
like
then
they said.
You end up competing on price most of the time, right? Because then one thing you can differentiate on is price. And that's a you know, race to zero is not a good strategy.
Agreed. Exactly.
I'm just saying.
For Walmart, it's working.
Well, but Walmart beats it. They beat the shit out of their suppliers.
That's what I'm saying. They make them race to zero.
Well, now they're competing differently. Right. They're competing much differently. They're competing. They're one of the stories in the book, actually. They're really competing on, especially with their acquisitions of like Jet.com mm-hmm. and really trying to shore up the experience that people have both online and offline and making that very seamless, you know, putting the little kiosks outside where people can pick up the groceries without having to go in the store, you know, all those kinds of things. And you're starting to see actually the prices eke up, because customers have told us, told me in my last life, and I'm sure you hear it as well, and us as consumers, we're willing to spend a little bit more money for a better experience.
Absolutely.
So,
totally.
You know, now it isn't a race to zero if you're doing all those other things. If you're just, if it's me, right? And it's just like, I'm just going to be a discount retailer and my differentiation, to your point, Jeff, is just price. It is a race to zero. But if you go, hold, what can I do to raise the price? It has to be the experience.
That customer experience for me as a buyer allows me to justify why I'm spending more money. It gives me that reason.
I use Uber as my example. So, you know, I catch it a lot. And if you listen to Clayton Christensen's new book, Competing Against Luck, his whole concept is everything we sell satisfies a job. And I'm oversimplifying here. So there's a job to be done. I need to go from point A to point B. I'm going to get in a yellow cab. I'm going to get an Uber. Either one will satisfy the job, correct?
Correct.
Get you to the airport.
Whatever, right?
Yes.
But I'm willing to get an Uber during surge pricing to get to the airport. Mm-hmm. Waiting on my app on the corner in Philly, and mm-hmm. it's freezing while taxis drive by. Why is that? Besides the fact I'm crazy, but why is that? Right.
Because you know, first of all, they're predictable.
Okay.
Second of all, they're going to speak English.
Okay.
Third of all, it's going to be clean. And,
okay.
And fourth of all, they're what you're used to. They are reliable in your mind, and you can see them coming around the corner. You can literally.
That's all experience based.
Yeah, mm-hmm. totally.
And nothing to do with. Okay, so validates my point, right? For me, it's I'm traveling around the world. I use Uber everywhere. I don't have to have the currency wherever I am. I don't mm-hmm. have to worry about money or the credit card machine not working in the back of a taxi, which, of course, always seems
happens
to be the
all
case.
The time.
No,
it's crazy. Isn't it
never happens.
Right?
Oh, please.
Never happens. You know, second, it
no, they say it's not working, so they can get cash.
Yeah,
oh,
I have no cash.
Why they're doing it? But then what? But then I'm like, I don't have cash. So then you sit there going, and then all of a sudden the machine works, right?
Right,
so,
exactly.
Anyway,
it's a miracle.
So, It's a miracle. Second is it connects directly to my expense report system. So I don't have to worry about losing my receipt and how much did I spend and, you know, that kind of thing. And the third for me, because I do travel around the world and I'm usually by myself, is someone knows where I was last. Those are the safety. Three things.
Hmm. Wow. Right?
So safety for, so those three things are worth surge pricing, waiting on the corner while taxis drive by.
By the way, all they must know that that's a big factor for a lot of people because now they've built in more safety features. Like I think you can even text someone your location through the app. Like
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And so for me, that's all experience based. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, I was in London last year and the black cabs were fighting in court to try to get Uber out. I really wanted to like, you know, go knock on someone's door and be like, why are you trying to stop them? Why not just try to improve your experience?
Right.
So that you can win.
Right.
London's a whole separate issue because London
but
is.
It's the same thing in Vegas that they didn't want them. And yeah. I mean, we can rattle off all the cities that have fought to keep Uber out. Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. So ultimately to me, the point is that why fight them in courts versus saying, maybe we should create an app. Maybe we could do this.
Right.
You know, how do we solve the credit card problem that always happens? Or how do we solve the safety problem? Like, what can we do to solve these same things that people have said they're willing to spend with Uber?
That's true.
And the answer is they're stuck in their own time warp and they refuse to acknowledge the fact that someone's beating the crap out of them because it's always worked before.
Well, so that's one of the things in the book. Is that I said that this has a lot to do with change. And especially when it comes to sales, you guys understand this and hopefully your listeners do as well, that in sales, we used to turn the same dials. Uh-oh, sales, we're not going to hit our numbers this month. We're going to do one of three things. One, hire more salespeople. Boom, dial one. Number two, we're going to start to spend more marketing money. Boom, dial two. We're going to cut costs. Dial three. They were the same forever, mm-hmm. right? When I'd be missing numbers, they'd be like, how fast can you get three more sales reps in here? Because if you can get three more sales reps in here, we'll know we'll get more revenue.
One of them will be successful.
Right? But the challenge now is that those dials are not as effective because it isn't just a salesperson. You have online ordering, you have chat, you have bots, it's so much more complicated. So, you know, you nailed it, Jeff, is that many go back to their old bag of tricks that are no longer as effective as it used to be. And so it's requiring an entirely new mindset, which the book is all about growth being a thinking game on changing the way you approach sales and growth.
There's always opportunity when there is some kind of a challenge, and most people don't look for the opportunity. They just look for a quick answer.
And well, if you're an entrepreneur, it's hard, right? You might have three salespeople. It's tough when you're small because every decision could close the doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so you're much more agile as an entrepreneur that you can turn on that dime than you are if you're a large company and you're plugging along. But I want to ask a question about Walmart because they are trying their best to compete with Amazon. Did buying Jet, was it like a mercy buy for them or was it a structural buy?
You know, I don't know the ins and outs of it. From the outside looking in, I can tell you this, that if they really wanted to shore up their online commerce, and this gave them the ability to do that very quickly. The percentage of revenue they're now earning on online versus offline is exponentially greater than it was before. Their largest category is actually groceries. And so Amazon, I'm guessing, bought Whole Foods to go after that business of Walmart's, mm-hmm. which people don't realize. They think that, well, why would Amazon buy Whole Foods? Well, they bought them because Walmart's biggest category is groceries.
Right.
And yeah. Okay.
Hello.
But do you use Jet just out of curiosity?
I'm sorry?
Do you use Jet?
I don't use Jet. I don't use Jet.
I thought they went away because I haven't seen ads for them. I saw ads for them when they first came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so Jet now, well, the CEO of Jet now runs the e-commerce business for Walmart. He's the guy who is doing everything for them. But from a Walmart perspective, they didn't have continuity between offline and online. They didn't have inventory visibility across the two. They've shored up all that stuff and their grocery business has grown. Their e-commerce business has grown. You know, they've now started to get into the things that are much more experience-oriented, with empowering their people in the stores to have technology, the kiosks outside so that moms with five kids in the back don't have to go in the store. They can just pull up, they load the groceries, and they drive away. Once again, going back to what are the pain points of their customers, mm-hmm. and how can they solve them and solve them at scale?
There's another thing that gives Walmart, in my opinion, a competitive advantage to Amazon. Walmart has a store in every single city in this country. And if they decided to partner with Uber, they could probably deliver anything you wanted within an hour.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea. And they have mm-hmm. for that reason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying, right? It's this, one of the other chapters in the book is co-opetition. So not partnership, right? But co-opetition. And there's a similar example where you have a partnership, Walmart and a Lyft or an Uber, to help give them delivery of groceries, similar to Amazon Prime, you know, what they were doing with groceries. So how can they do it? They can build a fleet or they can partner. So they partner. And then you have this co-opetition where you see brands like Amazon working with Kohl's, or Sears selling tires on Amazon, or, you know, Nike having a store on Amazon, which they swore they would never do. You know, at the end of the day, business is not the same as it used to be, especially when you're selling to customers.
And both of them have their own competitive advantages. Mm-hmm. Neither one's going to go away anytime quickly. Amazon's building these warehouses around the country like they're Tinker Toys. And they're ginormous. I mean, they're actually intimidating when you ride around a city. And the robots.
Yeah, and I think that people need to realize that this is not a zero-sum game. It's not a, you know, Amazon can take it all over. It's how do I compete? How do I compete locally? How do I give a compelling experience to my customers? How do I create something from a sales perspective, like the human, like you mentioned earlier, Jeff? Right, buying from a person is very different than buying on Amazon, but. What does Amazon do? They're really brilliant at using information, analytics, and machine learning to recommend to us what we may want next. So how do you replicate that in a store where, oh, you bought this. Do you know you need batteries? I mean, how many times have you walked out of a store and gone, oh my God, I need batteries, and got to go back to the store? Amazon, that would never happen because they would say you need batteries.
Right.
So how do you replicate that in the store?
The answer is you hire smarter people or you train them better. But I don't think that's going to happen in our lifetime. I think that there's
it might happen in mine.
It might, yeah. But there's a ceiling. I know. I take it all the time. Don't worry about it.
I had to. Come on.
Yeah, it's true. It's no problem, bitch.
I think, Jeff, you and I are the same age, so I take offense to it as well.
Oh, no.
So this is the challenge. The challenge is that you look at the other person's business and their model, and you try to nip away at it. I mean, buying Whole Foods for Amazon was a nip. Hmm. I joke about Jeff Bezos buying the Washington Post from his front pocket. Was that $250 million or $260 million? Hold on, let me check and see how much I brought with me. And I think that there's an opportunity right now for the larger businesses to take on those niches and actually be better at it, because they recognize them as compartments rather than part of the business. And I think Amazon's done a great job of, you know, the Whole Foods thing is a great experience, and they were smart to buy it.
Yeah, and I think you have to look at, there's other retailers. I mean, I think in the United States, we're just overstored. That doesn't have, you know, too much square footage per human being, mm-hmm. you know, per capita. That, I think that's where we struggle, versus retail is dead, because I think last year more retail opened than closed. We just were very aware of all the big footprints that closed, because the big footprint tends not to be what people are looking for. They're looking for the experiential, mm-hmm. smaller stores. So if you look at the Sephora's or the Ulta's, they're growing,
yeah.
and they're opening stores right? And then even if you look in fast food, the Shake Shacks are opening, that, you know, all very experience and experiential based.
Yeah.
I love Shake Shack.
I know, but you know what people don't know about Shake Shack?
You know what people don't know about Shake Shack? Their root beer is unbelievable.
Well, I cover them in the book, because Danny Meyer is about radical hospitality.
Yes, yeah. He is.
It is all about radical hospitality, right? And he's like, there's a kid crying, give him some soft ice cream. Mm-hmm. And the new CEO has actually said, and I quoted in the book, you know, make us broke because you've given away food to keep customers happy when we've done something wrong.
And there's no argument. Well, what's so cold about them? Right. They don't care.
Yeah, Jeffrey always tells them their fries are too cold. Right. And then all of a sudden he gets new fries that are hot.
I've spoken. Right. I spoke to the manager in Charlotte, the Shake Shack manager in Charlotte. They are dedicated.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So let's go back to the Zappos story. And let's talk about if you're listening to this podcast and you have an open rec to hire your next salesperson, what are they going to look like? So I challenge you, people that are listening, hire someone out of hospitality. Hmm. Hire someone from the Four Seasons that wants to get into sales. They believe in their soul and in their core about giving really great service.
Now even the Ritz, where they're phony about it, they can I place you on a brief hold? Like, dude. But they understand that there is a dynamic about them that says, I'm leading with service. I'm not going to lead with an excuse.
So now I want you to think, and this is an age old argument. I'm happy to get into it, but is sales learned or, is it nurtured or did you born with it? Yeah. That's a whole debate probably for another show, but I believe the A sellers are born with it. It doesn't mean that people who learn it can't hit quota. It has everything to do with this personality. And so how do you draw out those that are much more customer-led than I'm here to make a paycheck-led, right?
And for those of you diehards that don't think you're born with it, you're born with a personality. Yes. And then you learn the fundamentals and the science. Selling is not an art. It's a science. You learn the science of selling so that you can replicate what it is that you're doing that makes you successful. Born with means that you have basic intelligence, that maybe your parents were smart, that you're a hard worker, and the soft things that go with it. But then you have to learn the principles of selling in order to be able to really achieve.
Yeah, and I use Tiger Woods as an example. He was born to have a golf club in his hand, no question, or Michelle Wee, right? Born to have a golf club in their hand. And I could take golf lessons every day, 8 hours a day for the next 3 years, and I might become a scratch golfer, right, which means that I sort of shoot par, and I might take your money on Sundays, but I'll never make tour because that was not what I was necessarily born to do. And I feel that way about selling. I feel like it matches what I was born with and my personality. And I had really great coaches and teachers along the way. And more importantly, I'm a student of my profession of being a seller. So I constantly wanted to go and stretch myself to learn. So podcasts, books, talking to people, seminars, I was all about every day, how do I get better? One thing a day I would do to hone my skill of selling.
I'm going to just challenge you diehards right now. Write down what you were born to do. Mm. Take a minute and write down what you think you were born to do. I'm going to also throw one more tip at you. When we were waiting for Tiffany to come on, she had us turned off, the sound turned off until the exact time of the interview. And in the meantime, she was typing her ass off to be able to do something else before the interview. She showed up 10 minutes early, which is the right thing to do. And then she worked until the 9 minutes till the 1 minute.
Until we were ready.
Yeah. Okay. So understand that Orison Swett Marden in 1908 wrote, "Never underestimate the value of the use of spare minutes." Mm-hmm. And here's a woman who totally took advantage of those spare minutes. It's none of our business what you were writing. Maybe you were ordering something on jet.com and didn't even know it. But but the bottom line was she was working rather than checking on her.
Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. And I think, people today, and now I spend my days keeping a pulse on what's sort of going on in the market. I sort of get paid to be the student of what it is that I do. And so I get to talk to lots of customers. I consume a lot of content from all kinds of sources and I sort of aggregate it and I come back out with what's the story that this is trying to tell the market and how do I do that? So people say all the time, I just don't have time. And this is my full-time job. So I was actually responding to, a question from one of our sales guys from Salesforce asking me, hey, how do I do something in a particular deal? And I was giving them sort of some advice. So coming back and saying, you have to find the time. I know as sellers, our time is so valuable, but right now, I guarantee you an average of 50, 55% of your time is in non-selling activities. Mm-hmm. So if you can't free up some of your time by using technology in order to take some of that off your plate. You're never going to have enough time in the day to spend that half hour or an hour like I used to hone your skills and whatever that might be. It could be taking, you know, listening to a podcast about empathy or EQ. Like, how do I improve the soft side of my selling skills? How do I improve using whatever tools I am? I'm going to watch a YouTube video or use a Trailhead if you're with Salesforce, and I'm going to go learn how to do something different in the tool so I can free up some of that 55% time.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Totally
this
cool.
Interview has been amazing. I'm so glad you have come on our show. Thank you, Tiffany.
And we don't want to end it, Tiffany, but we're gonna.
Well, we have to, but it's really
that's okay. We're gonna
really
end on a
awesome.
High note because I am a Cowboys fan.
Oh, wait a second. Hold on.
He's pulling out his middle
this with
finger.
You.
Oh yeah.
But in the
and
meantime,
the Cowboys and the Eagles don't like each other. So
no, exactly. But in spite of that, I actually like you.
No, this has been great. Where do people get more info? Where can they find out more about you and your book? All that.
Yeah, so the book Growth IQ is on sale at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and 800 and most all online retailers, Walmart, Target, et cetera. It's in local small independents as well, but it's in Audible. It's in the Kindle version. I'm actually reading the book. It's 9 hours of this illustrious Lauren Bacall voice, I guess.
Yeah, I just read one. I feel your pain.
So it was an interesting experience, I might add. And then you can, I'm pretty good on Twitter. So Tiffany_Bova, you can check me out at tiffanybova.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. So, you know, wherever, and I have a podcast called What's Next with Tiffany Bova, and I get people to talk about some cool stuff. And so, you know, I'm just trying to go
out
there.
Wait, was that an invitation? Was that an invitation for us to come on your podcast?
For a Philadelphia Eagle, I got to think about it.
Yeah. While you're thinking about it, I happen to know what's next.
Okay, what's next?
Well, he'll tell you on the podcast.
I'll tell you on the podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. This is our podcast.
This has been awesome.
You were
thank
a great
you.
Guest, though. I'll tell you that. Tiffany. You're an absolutely great guest. I totally appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. Now go sell or die.
Okay. All right. We will. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There was a lot in that interview.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit too much. Maybe
no.
As a diehard, you may want to go back and listen to that again.
Yeah.
Because it's not just customer experience, but it's how you need to be speaking your how you should be spending your non-selling time and dealing with your e-commerce competition. Because people are going to buy online no matter what you do. And what Tiffany gave us today was insight. Now, this is what I want you to do, die hard. I want you to get a pen out or get your notepad out or get your iPad out or get anything you can write on, a Word document in your laptop. I want you to make a list of the 5 things that you tell customers that you think are impactful to them. I want you to talk about what you do after you deliver a product. What is the proactivity in your customer service versus the reactivity in your customer service? And you have to define that so that it becomes benchmarkable and repeatable. It shouldn't just be, well, we just delivered something. What should I tell this guy? No, no. We just delivered something. You have to know what to tell that guy. And you have to do it every time you tell a guy. So I have always, I'm a testimonial person. I tell salespeople to go out and shoot a small, short video of before, shoot a small video of during if you're going to be delivering or installing something, and then shoot a short video of after so that you have literally identified the customer experience through the words and the eyes and the mind of the customer.
So this is a great episode, and Tiffany looks at sales and selling in a unique way and in a different way than a lot of our guests, because she's talking about not just the what happens up until your closing process, but what happens after the sale and how important that is.
But I think that it's important to understand that she's a service person who has sales knowledge.
Yes.
She understands that if you say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing, you will lose the next sale. Mm-hmm. not just performing service.
And you won't just lose the next sale. You'll lose the referrals that could come from that sale.
Your pipeline falls.
I want you to re-listen to this episode and share it with your friends. Please share this out because this is a really unique and great way to look at sales and selling. But for now, we have to wrap this baby up.
Okay, so
Friday, we have Best Of. And next week, we have David Berkus, who's joining us to talk about leadership innovation. And then we also have Kathleen Hessard.
Kathleen Hessard, who played in my bedroom when I wasn't there.
Wait, what? That's a great tease. Find out what that
You'll
means next week.
Learn all about that next week. I approve that message. And until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. Get out there and sell something, you diehards, even if your ass falls off.
4Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.